Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you here tonight on Wellness Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. Tonight, we're going to be talking about Lyme disease, ticks, how our body is not doing so well when we get bit by bugs that are outside, and we say, what can I really do about it? Or should I really do anything about it, number one? Number two, what do I do when I get sick? I don't know what to do. Do I just go to the doctor, or do I just let it kind of heal on its own? All of these different things we say, what's really about getting sick from bugs? My guest this evening is going to be Dr. Bill Rawls, MD. However, he's not with us at the moment, but he should be joining us shortly. He has two books out. One is Suffering Long Enough and Unlocking Lyme. And both of those books, what they are about is about his progress through being bit by a tick and also then being able to say, how can I get myself healthy? Because this is not the kind of life I'd like to live. If you'd like to ask a question this evening or if Dr. Rawls is trying to get through, again, the number to call in is 424-258-9318. And as soon as you hear the intro, just please push 1 and you will be in the queue. And I'll be able to see your call on the line. So many times, you know, we say that what is a tick about? You know, when we look at it and we say, if this is a tick, what's the big deal? And why should we be looking at it? And is it going to be something where we say it's a real problem or not? Dr. Rawls will be sharing all of this with us. And again, too, please check out the other show we had the other day. I think it was on Monday, July 3rd. It was all about ticks and prevention and clothing, permethrin, and also about DEET. You know, I posted it today. Is it to DEET or not to DEET? We never know. And do we also take a shower in some of this stuff or soak our clothing? And is it really safe? So, Dr. Rawls, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us to talk about this, you know, this Lyme disease and ticks that so many people are fearing these days.
Well, pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
I almost thought we forgot you.
I slipped right in there.
You sure did. So, Dr. Rawls, don't you think that we become, as I've said before, we become now nature phobic, and we've given ourselves an excuse and a reason to stay inside versus going outside when we see that ticks, are a problem in the north, well, really across the country. I live here in the deep south in New Orleans, and it rained for 15 days, and now you can't go outside without them, like, latching onto you, if you're one of those people. I'm one of those people, and they're all over the place, and, oh, yeah, they have West Nile and everything else in Zika, and people have kind of gotten afraid. Don't you think we've become nature phobic?
To a certain extent, but it's, nature's always been a double-edged sword. It's there always have been microbes that are really willing and ready to use us as a host. So this is an ongoing thing. It's not a new thing. But we know a lot more now. So now I'm at a point that I'm looking at it and going, I can enjoy nature without being threatened by nature. And that's just from being very tick vigilant. I'm very careful. I do a lot of hiking. And I do a lot of traveling, and I'm very, very careful and conscious of how microbes can enter my body when I do that. So you can have your cake and eat it too, so to speak.
Well, you know, I think the concept that bugs have always been around. You know, I lived in the Northeast, many decades ago, and the deer were in our backyard. We used to go out, you know, there'd be a whole family of them there. We were around them all the time. We would sit down in the grass, and they would come up by us and sit down. People have, you know, been around this stuff forever, yet we haven't died. Do you know what I mean? We haven't gotten so debilitating
sure.
disease that we are wheelchair bound. We are not that we have changed our genetic lineage and people are having all these chronic diseases. So really, there seems to be more of, I won't call it a break in our immune system. I would call it more what I usually say about elders and their immune system, I say it looks like cotton candy on an X-ray, you know, on one of the CT scans. If you see their bowel and stuff, it looks like cotton candy. So I think when we think about, you know, how did these bugs and their germs and bacteria and stuff enter into our body and cause a problem, I liken it back to cotton candy. Some things are seeping through where before we had a really good filter, and now we don't, right?
Well, I think there are different kinds of things that are affecting it. People are living longer because we are keeping them longer with drugs, but it's not as much drugs as you would think. It's good sanitation. So we're already doing a lot of things to protect ourselves from microbes. If you lived in a third world country and had a latrine that you used and your water was contaminated, as it is in so many third world countries, you would carry a lot more microbes in your body that were pathogens than we do. So we're fairly used to not having that kind of illness that's been so much of a part of the world. But we are getting these chronic illnesses, and I think it's deeply related to our relationship with other microbes. And, you know, two factors: the composition of our microbiome, the total spectrum of all the microbes in our body, and our immune function. And there are a lot of things out there that are threatening immune function right now.
So you think we come at a tipping point? Because I know we look at, you know, we used to play outside. We used to do all these things. We weren't that great. You know, we'd pick stuff outside. We would eat it. Now we've gotten to the point where, you know, everything must be cleaned. It has to have all of the pesticides off of it, all the germs off of it. You need to make sure you do this, that, and the other. And have we become over-hygienic and therefore those bacteria and germs and things have maybe more way of penetrable, and then they also, for lack of, they don't want to be the next guy out either by some hygiene process. They turn around and they put a biofilm on themselves. They become something that's mutatable. They become something that's, hey, you're not going to get me kind of devil in the body.
Well, yeah, there's, you know, it's always been... we've always had a relationship with microbes. There's no doubt about it. You know, when we're born, we pick up the microbiome from our mother, and kids that are born vaginally have different microbiome than kids that are born by C-section, and we pick up the microbes in that surrounding environment. But we collect microbes for the rest of our lives. We get bitten by ticks and mosquitoes, and we drink things, and we have intimate contact with people, and we swim in contaminated water. And all of these things are affecting our microbiome. We add to it. If your immune system is robust, you will not get ill. It's as simple as that. You know,
it's... Second for about the chronic disease thing, because when we think of chronic disease, we always think of the elderly also, anybody over 50. And pretty much that's because their toxic load has been reached. I mean, I swim in lakes all the time, and now I'm afraid to go into a pool that's clean with salt water. It's like, I don't know what's in it. It's ridiculous, you know. Sometimes I think I'm going, you know. It's like, I got to change this mindset, you know. But we look at it and we say, have we reached that tipping point in lineage or in generations? Do you know what I mean? So are we looking at Lyme in 4-, 5-, and 6-year-olds, or are we looking at Lyme cohabitating with a chronic disease situation in those over 50?
I'm seeing it all in all ages. But I think it's important to recognize that Lyme disease is not the result of a tick bite very often, chronic Lyme disease. It's, you know, very seldom is it, do I talk to someone who got a tick bite and then they got still and develop chronic illness after that. Most of the time, people don't remember the tick bite, and they've been carrying these microbes. But if you go back and trace their stress factors, you can build out this perfect storm of immune disruption that occurs in virtually every person. So there are always these things that are building up through their lifetime, and sometimes all it takes is that straw that breaks the camel's back, and they become chronically ill, and it puts them into a vicious cycle that's very hard to get rid of. So that can happen at any age. You know, I talk to teenagers that are eating a terrible diet, and they've got a lot of family stress and peer pressure, and they're over exercising instead of exercising like a normal kid would be. They're in these pushing high athlete situations, they're really competitive sports, and they're just, you know, you look at the stress factors, and they've got all of them, and they're getting sick. So certainly we have. As we age, part of the aging process is we have a compromise of our immune system. And you know, that's ultimately why we die, is our immune system is no longer working anymore. And that's the root of all chronic illnesses. But I see it in every age range, and it has to do with the stress factors that build up through life.
You know, I think of it as the elders, they have that breakdown that eventually shows up, and it's sort of like we see people in their 50s and 60s, and they say, you know, I've been pushing and pushing my whole life, and I just can't push anymore, and boom, then they're sick. And then we also liken it back to the millennial, you know, kids, and we say, well, you know, he's in four or five sports, and he's got these clubs and a girlfriend, and he's going on to college, and he's trying to get his AP tests in line so I can get a scholarship, but you know, and you know, all of this stuff. Yeah. And really, they've also broken down their body also. And what you hear those kids say, I got pushed and pushed and pushed, and either I'm going to go over the edge or I better figure something out. So in essence,
sure,
we look at almost any chronic disease or any of these diseases, and we say, are they just an end result to put a tag or a label on the highest collection of whatever you could test, when we're really saying is that we pushed our body that far, and it's, you know, it's raising the white flag, you know?
Sure. Yeah. I'm wrestling with that concept of aging personally right now, because I didn't remember a tick bite. I'm sure that I spent my whole youth in the woods. I know that I picked up lots of different microbes. And then I became an obstetrician and went to a small town and started delivering babies and was on call every second to the third night. And that continued for over 15 years, almost 20 years with training, that I didn't sleep virtually every second to third night. And eventually it got to the point I couldn't sleep on the nights I wasn't on call. And I was eating really bad food and had a lot of other stress factors in my life and got miserably ill toward the end of my 40s. Tried conventional therapies, didn't get well, and eventually came around to this other concept of restoring immune function using lifestyle modifications, diet, herbal therapy, and did that intensely for about 5 years. It took me more than 5 years to get back to normal. But once I got there, you know, it's gotten better every year. I'm turning 60 in next month, and you know, I'm as active as I was in my early 40s. I don't have knee pain. I don't have joint pain. You know, in my 30s, I had right hip pain that was severe enough that I knew I would have a hip replacement by the time I was 50. I'm turning 60, and my right hip is great. I don't have low back pain. I have plenty of energy. I still watch things, picky about diet, keep my stress level down. I make sure I get 8 hours of sleep at night. I don't over-exercise. and I take a big pile of herbs twice a day. And, you know, it just keeps getting better every year instead of worse. So it's hard for me to gauge what aging is because I'm so much better now than I was 10 years ago. It's really weird.
Yeah, well, I think we look back at it even 10 or 20 years ago. It was, I mean, I look back at my life and I was putting yellow legal pads, stapling them into my date book because there wasn't enough space on my whole day page for my stuff I had to do.
Right.
You know, I mean, I was just like off the wall, had so much to do. And, you know, I look at my schedule too. You know, I mean, I was working all day, taking classes at night, had four kids I was raising on my own. And it was like, I mean, it was okay that I got home from my physics class. If it ended at midnight, I got home at 2 and I had to be up at 4. But if it snowed, forget it. You weren't sleeping that night, you know. So, yeah, we've really pushed ourselves. And I think the idea that it's more so can we come back from what we have done to our bodies. And I think the disease sometimes is because we need to put a name on it and we can say, oh, well, that looks out of range. Let's start to work there. But in essence, everybody's hitting these walls and they just don't know what they are. And really the wall is your body says, hey, I'm done. And you've got to figure this thing out because we aren't going to make it to the finish line. And some people don't make it to the finish line, you know. Let's talk for a little bit about, you know, I mean, this likens right into what I just said. You know, you've got to put a label on it. Well, a lot of people with Lyme disease don't get a diagnosis. And we say, do they need a label on it to be able to begin to clear up their act? And I always say, you know, oh, so you're telling me your body's broken and let's start working on clearing some things out, putting some things back in, and let's see how we can restore it versus, do I have to keep testing you up the wazoo to be able to find that name so we can cure it, attack it, get rid of it, and then you'll be A-OK, right?
Yeah. It's my approach to evaluating a patient is very, very different than I was taught in my conventional background and most conventional physicians use. You know, we do a great job in conventional medicine of diagnosing and treating acute illness. And when you look at the concept of chronic illness, before 1960, doctors didn't really treat chronic illness. I mean, my grandfather was a general practitioner. I used to go make house calls with him, and there were sickly people out there, but he didn't do anything for them unless they had something acute that he could fix. So we started treating chronic illness, but we still treat it like acute illness, you know. So we look for the process that's abnormal, and you do the labs and collect the symptoms and try to put people in this little thing we call a diagnosis, this box, and we treat the diagnosis. And when you look at illness from the point of view of processes, things that are going wrong in the body, typically in chronic illness, everything is breaking down all at once. So if you're treating the processes, you're using multiple toxic drugs and you're not making the patient well. You're putting them in a state of managed illness. That's the best you can expect. So when I look at a patient, yeah, the diagnosis is important. Some of the labs are important, but that's not what I'm focusing on. I'm looking and saying, why is this patient ill? What has made this patient ill? Why did these factors come together to cause chronic illness? And so I'm working backwards. I'm looking and going, what are they eating? What are their stress factors? What are these things in their lives that are affecting them that have affected their microbiome balance and their immune function that have allowed these factors to come together to cause them to be ill? And when you start doing that, the obvious solution is addressing those factors and not treating the processes. And so that diagnosis, while it may still be important, it's much more secondary. It's not a necessity to get the patient well. You know, I went through that in my office all the time when a patient would come in and say, they think I've got MS and they're working me for up that for that, and then they're not sure, but they might have to think I have this other thing, and they're not treating me until they know what I've got. And I say, okay, well, let's go see what your stress factors are, and let's go ahead and start working on these things, and maybe we can get you well before they even find the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So it's a different approach.
You know,
approach.
I think that that demand that you have to have a name on it comes from the opportunity that you have to have somebody to pay for it. In other words, you can't say to somebody, well, I have a stress factor, I have a chronic illness, or maybe my immune system is overtaxed, because there is not a code
sure.
for that in which your outdoor parameters are going to pay for it. I mean, this is black and white. I mean, this is
yep.
just what it is. Health people are out squawking about, you know, I've got to have this, that, or the other, insurance or health care, when in essence, you know, it's going to turn around and going to bite them in the derriere, because they're still going to be in that box
yep.
and they're still not going to get what they need. So, I mean, while we are all fighting for this quality of these health care benefits that they were demanding, I would almost say, no, I would just take an allotment of money and, you know, from the government every year, and let me figure out how to fix myself, you know? And
yep.
yet we get stuck in ourselves, and we believe that, no, everybody else has to fix me, so it's their job and they're going to pay for it. It's sort of like,
right.
I think it's a backward kind of thinking, yes?
Absolutely. You know, it's when you look at chronic illness of any kind, chronic Lyme disease, anything else, what the conventional medical system can offer is managed illness. If you want to be well, you're going to have to take responsibility for your own well-being. You're going to have to do the things that you have to do to restore normal immune function. And most of that is outside the doctor's office. So what I would propose
right.
is that we keep our system like it is and use it what it's designed for, to treat acute illness. And we build out an educational system with health coaches and other ancillary people to educate people how to carry themselves through this restorative process that changes their lifestyle and embraces natural therapies like herbal therapies and other kinds of things. And most of that is done outside the doctor's office. If we were doing that, if everyone was doing that, we'd be spending about a third as much on health care as we are now, and we wouldn't have a health care crisis.
Which is what naturopathic physicians, which is what I am, that's what we do. We're still considered
exactly.
primary care physicians utilizing, the, you know, natural cures. Let's talk for a second about people say, you know, in your book, again, your book is Unlocking Lyme, The Myths, Truths, and Practical Solutions of Chronic Lyme Disease. We can almost take this book and say this is any disease, because so many times people will say, I have an infection, and we're like, okay, do we always have to know the name? Do we have to know the class? Because we're going to beat it this way. Versus, it's almost like you're standing there like with a fly swatter trying to kill the bugs, but you're still standing
yeah.
there holding a piece of cotton candy. You know what I mean? Now, it doesn't make
sure.
much sense to be able to stand there with the cotton candy, which you know they're going to go to, and stand there and fly swat them. Something's got to change. You know, either you're going to have to up your killing part of the fly swatter, or you're going to have to remove the candy. So I think it's a lot of times people will say, well, I don't know where to start. And I think your book is a good start, because it almost covers almost all the parameters all the way around full circle. And they could open up any page and say, I think this is where I need to start, and start there. Yes?
Well, so, yeah, thank you. When I look at chronic Lyme disease, I'm looking at a fundamental model for all chronic illness. I look at chronic illness as microbiome imbalances. Everyone has these stealth microbes, and then these factors that come together to disrupt immune function. And so addressing those factors through natural therapies, through dietary modifications, through all of these things is much more important than just doing heroic and symptomatic therapies. And, just to put in a plug for you guys, naturopaths do that. That's the primary
yeah.
part of their practice. And you know, that concept is much more ingrained in naturopathic education than the conventional medical system. I'd like to see more doctors embracing that, but I think we may have a long way to get there.
Yeah, especially when they can't both sit in the same room, they have to argue, and it's like, I don't understand that concept. But anyway, you know,
yeah.
It's almost like a cancer doctor and a brain doctor both wanting to fight also because they still believe of their own tears, you know, and it's like, I don't
right.
understand that. You know, you're just going to have to figure something out there. So let's
right.
talk for a second about, I think there was an article I had sent it to you about people getting Lyme and where they are located in the U.S. And
right.
they were saying about birds, you know, that birds would be carrying the ticks here or there. And I had someone on the show the other day, an outdoorsman, a survivalist, and he's had, you know, he said one day he and his kids had gone outside and gotten over 300 ticks on each of them, and they were just like sitting there just picking all these off, but none of them got sick because they were all latched on, but they just didn't, you know. So I think it's, we look at, is the body in that state of teeter-tottering? Also, you know, if you are a person from the Northeast and you move to Arizona and you say, oh, I'm going to have a better quality of life, my health is going to be better, or I'm going to get better doctors. I know hundreds of these people that do this. And then they get to Arizona and they say, oh, my gosh, now I've got Lyme disease. The doctor found it. And they think that it came from living in Arizona. When
right.
they could potentially have, you know, these latent bugs in their system, in the bioterrain, it's sort of like
sure.
if you take tulips and you plant them in the south, they're going to come up in December. If you take them up north to Canada, they might never come up. You know, so there's something latent in our bodies that a certain situation would provoke it or bring it on. It's almost like putting fertilizer on flowers, you know what I mean? Just like,
right.
you know, you were saying, it's like these latent things. Stress is a big thing that can kick things over, but also does change of lifestyle, change of health, change of eating patterns. You could
right.
be eating healthier, and you ate horrible before, and now you're sick, and you're going, why? It's because the change had altered something in your biome, right?
Correct. Yeah, no doubt about it. It's, part of human culture, you know. I mean, humans have been being bitten by mosquitoes and ticks since they were humans. They have found, you know, Borrelia in ticks in the Arctic Circle all the way down to the tropics. There are many studies with birds. Birds carry ticks, and ticks carry microbes, and it's
right.
not surprising to find Borrelia being carried around by birds, and birds do migrate. But, you know, this microbe has been around a long time. They found it in the Iceman thawed out 5,000-year-old mummy in the Italian Alps. They've also found Borrelia in ticks frozen in amber from the Dominican Republic that are 15 million years old. This is a very, very ancient microbe, and it's been infecting humans for a very, very, very long time. And I think the illness is much more common. I'm in the middle of writing a blog right now about Charles Darwin. I was reading about him. And, you know, he's a father of evolution. He collected bugs from a very early age. He traveled to a lot of places. But he was under a lot of stress in his life. From age 20 on, he had all the symptoms of Lyme disease. I think Charles Darwin
right.
probably had Lyme disease. So this thing is not new. Now, there's no doubt that with environmental changes that are going on with all the things that we're doing to the earth, yes, it's shifting tick populations. But whether Lyme disease is becoming more common or not, or whether people are getting bitten by ticks more, nobody really knows that. You know, I mean, before maybe 1930, people mainly lived outdoors. They worked out in fields.
Mm-hmm.
They got tick bites every day, all day. So
yeah,
in
there
some
was
ways,
never
we're
screens
a little bit
on
more
windows.
Isolated.
You know, there was never
right.
screens on windows or anything, and everybody went out at night
exactly.
to go to the bathroom at their porta potty. I mean, you know, it's just the way
right.
it was. I mean, I remember doing that, you know. But
sure.
And it's we look back on it and we say, so here's another question I think thought-provoking. if everybody is a part of, everybody has their DNA, and everybody's DNA is part of their ancestral lineage. And if you keep going back and going back and going back, was there ever, quote, a perfect DNA? The answer would probably be never. And then we look at it, well, how many dings can the DNA take before the DNA says, I'm done? And I think that's important to look at, because maybe potentially that's what the chronic illness rise now and cancer rise is, DNA saying I'm done, overdone, you know?
Yeah, maybe. I think it's really a lot of environmental factors. I mean, the emotional stress, the level of petrochemicals that are in our environment, radiation. You know, there's a study out of Brazil showing that people that live within 500 meters of a microwave tower had an 85% increase in cancer. Wow.
But also too, you know, that will ding your DNA. Right, and that will, all of these environmental things ding your DNA in some fashion and pass it on to you know the next generation. I mean, we're seeing this quite often. What did your parents have, you know? I mean, how long, you know, you and I sit down and take a family history, it's like, how many pages do you need, right?
Well, it's actually your body has pretty good mechanisms of repairing your DNA if you're eating good food and everything else. And what you're talking about, these dings, most of them are actually modifications that we have retained. Bad genes,
right,
our body actually tries to get rid of. And we try to, and organisms that have bad genes, we tend to flush those. You know, we tend to, they don't survive very well in nature. So humans, we've conserved more bad genes, but when you're talking about bad genes generally show up in childhood. The only exceptions to that are the BRCA genes of breast cancer and things like Huntington's chorea. But when you're talking about other DNA mutations, what you're talking about is modifications that worked at one point in time that don't work as well now. Or it's a double modification that just happened to be retained.
Right.
But it's like people who are very, very sensitive to carbohydrates now, you know, they can just look at a carbohydrate and get fat. Those people had ancestors that were the survivors. Those people lived in times of starvation, and they persisted and developed genes to take advantage of every little morsel of carbohydrate that came along. Well, if you've got those genes and you're eating a modern diet that's loaded with carbohydrates, you're going to get diabetes. So they're not all bad. Some of them are modifications that just don't work anymore that we retained from our ancestors from a different time.
Right. Let's talk for a little bit about now we've just touched on herbs, we touched on environmental factors and stress, and let's talk a little bit about food. You know, food, and it's so important to be able to have a varied diet, but it's also important to have a diet that does not overstress the body. Some people kind of go hog wild on all these green things, and they're saying, I can't understand why I'm feeling worse. Because maybe they're not giving their body what their body needs versus, you know, jumping on the bad bandwagon of every single fad that comes down the road.
Sure. Yeah, I think a good diet is fairly basic common sense, really. It's, you know, you look at what our ancestors were eating, and you look at what has worked in the past, and you look at some variations of that, and you know, if you look at history, people were starving a lot. And if we look at the paleo diet, that's more than 10,000 years ago, it was, you know, people weren't eating grains. They weren't eating very much in the way of nuts. They were eating lots and lots of vegetable matter, about two-thirds vegetable matter in most cases, and then meat. But it was extremely lean meat. And it was very low in carbohydrate and very low in fat, and people had a lot more risk of starving. You know, it took all day to get enough food just to eat.
Right.
That changed when we embraced grains and started farming. And so by 10,000 years ago in Europe, people already adopted to wheat, to ancient forms of wheat, and they were eating a lot of it. They weren't eating nearly as, they very quickly switched to that over vegetable matter because it had a lot more energy in it, you know. Our brain says we need that carbohydrate. We need that energy food. For most of human history, it hasn't been present. So they switched to a grain-based diet, and we immediately started, fossils and history show that there was immediately a lot more arthritis and a lot more just general degenerating problems. But, you know, even that is nothing to what we're doing now. The grain that we were eating 100 years ago is very different than the grain we're eating now and the quantities of it. You know, when you've got one guy out in the Midwest who's driving a tractor the size of a house that can produce as much grain as an army of people that will feed a true army with one guy, wow, that's really an aberration. That's not what food is supposed to be about. So I think you've got to respect things. I think you can eat some grains. Rice and oats tend to be better than wheat. A little bit of corn in a natural form is probably okay. But you really, any good diet, in my opinion, is half vegetables. But cooking vegetables is a good idea. I mean, there are a lot of microbes and fungi and all kinds of things in the food. So a salad every now and then is okay, or a stick of celery, but you really ought to cook most of your food. That really does help digestion.
It also, it de-stresses if you have a body that's already in a chronic disease state, by telling it it's going to eat raw food all the time, it may be good for some people, but when we think of Ayurvedic or Chinese medicine, if you continue to put cold into cold, you're going to have a real big problem. You really need to have warmed foods or cooled foods or foods that have already started to digest by the cooking factors. So we always have to think, it's not always what this one's doing or the other one's doing. It's more what's best for you, and it's very individualized.
Sure. Yeah, those ancient observations hold true. And it's that kind of thinking, I think, is reasonable. But so much of Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine is just good old common sense. And we're not using that enough. We should be just paying more attention to what just is logical. You respect your ancestors and our natural food supplies, but recognize that, we're living in the Garden of Eden. Wow, you can get wonderful fresh vegetables and all these wonderful foods, and it just breaks my heart when I'm in the grocery store behind somebody and I'm looking at their cart and they've got a cart full of junk, and every single piece of food is packed in a plastic wrapper or a box, and there's nothing that resembles anything natural. And here we are blessed with this time where you can get all these just wonderful fresh foods. Wow. And we're just discounting it. We're ignoring it. It's crazy.
It's the funniest thing. I went to Trader Joe's this past weekend, and they had regular bananas and organic bananas. And the regular bananas was almost all empty, the rack, and the organic bananas didn't have any gone. And I'm thinking, and I'm standing there watching this lady, and she's watching me, and I'm picking up, I only get two bananas because that's all I'm going to eat, and I'm not going to waste it. I'm not just going to grab just because. And I'm watching her, and she's taking her plastic bag, because I never take plastic bags, but she's taking her plastic bag, and she's putting her regular bananas in it, and she kind of walks away, and I'm thinking, what kind of thoughts or judgments do we need to instill in people so that they might think of that or think of a different choice? There's been times I've gone to Trader Joe's before, and a lady was standing next to me, and she was picking up an orange, and I don't know, I had said something to her, and she made a comment back, and I said, oh, but this is the organic one. She says, oh, I don't need to have that one. I really don't care. And I'm going, oh, you mean you don't care what you're buying, or you don't care what's going in your body, or what do you not care about? And it was, it just kind of, I guess maybe in my train of thought, I'm going, what are you talking about? It's sort of like it was so foreign to me that I couldn't conceptualize what she was saying, you know? And it's like, well, what do you not care about, right?
Been trained by the food industry to want our food cheap and loaded with starch and sugar and fat. And it's, you know, I see it in restaurants. I call it the weak chef's crutch. You can, any chef can take anything and load it with fat and starch, and it will taste good no matter what. And they know that. And it takes a lot more effort to make vegetables taste good, so we tend to shy away from them. But our foods, yeah, it's a well-known statistic that Americans spend a lower percentage of their income on food than any nation on earth. That's frightening.
Yeah.
Not to spend money on food, and wow. You know, if we were spending twice as much on food, we'd be spending half as much on drugs and health care. Well, you know, the food industry and the drug industry do not want you to be preaching that because, you know, people eat bad food and they need drugs and it's a good cycle. And, it's like the Matrix movie with the red pill, black pill, blue pill, and it's most people just take the blue pill and keep right on doing what they're doing, and they live in this artificial world. And it's time for folks to wake up a bit.
You know, so let's talk that we said now, sleep is necessary, good food, also not to overtax yourself. Let's talk for a little bit about herbs. We have just a little bit more time. Herbs, I almost liken it back to the core essence of what you should be getting from your food, or the core essence of what you should be getting from the earth to, quote, restore and heal your body. That's what I call herbs. Because, I saw this on, there was an article the other day, and I don't recall where it was, and it said something about stevia and Lyme disease. I'm going, it's not the stevia. It is this compound in the stevia. So, you know, and I think we have become a very mechanistic kind of people and linear in our thinking, is that if this compound is in stevia and stevia is on the name of the box, then I must be getting that compound. And the answer is no. So I think if we would really be more complete in our conversations and going back to the exact component that's important, that's what you're looking for in herbs. You know, you're looking for this component is this component in this bottle. And generally, if you're buying from the right companies, it may be. There are, of course, you and I both can attest to this, is probably 90% of the companies, there it is not there. So it is very difficult to be able to be on the journey to make these decisions, don't you think?
Absolutely, yes. And it's, as we've cultivated our food, we've moved away from that protection offered by nature. As I said, if you went back before 10,000 years ago, the vegetable matter that humans ate, you wouldn't have really been able to differentiate herbs and food plant, because they, you know, most food plants, it's like a sweet potato. I mean, it would, the earliest sweet potatoes are about as big as your thumb, and they don't have very much starch, and they're not orange. When you look at all the original, the plants that people, humans ate, they just selected out things that weren't poisonous, and there are a lot of choices out there, but they didn't taste good. They ate them because they had to have that to survive, and they had to eat a lot of it to get enough carbohydrate to survive, to just have energy to run the brain and muscles. So they were getting all of these other compounds too. Some things had more sugar in them. I picked blackberries the other day, and it occurred to me that here I am in this blackberry patch, and the blackberries were really small. and they don't nearly as much sugar. Well, that's more like real wild food, all right? But
right.
I'm in this blackberry patch, and I'm watching for ticks, and there are all these other animals. You know, birds are eating this, and that's part of nature, that the bush offers this fruit for the creature to eat, and the seeds
mm-hmm.
go through its system, and it fertilizes it and spreads all the seeds around for the plant.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot more going on there because there are a lot of creatures eating these seeds. Well, the ticks and the mosquitoes and the other bugs take advantage of that, the chiggers, so they can catch a ride on the birds, on the rabbits and other things that are in the patch, and humans and bears when they come along. And then the microbes are taking advantage of that to develop a host relationship, to move from host to host. As you know, you come back to the blackberry patch, you get bitten by ticks again, and so those microbes have an opportunity to spread to other hosts. But nature provides protection, because if you're natural foraging, the blackberries, those kinds of blackberries, and all of the other naturally foraged foods have all these potent chemicals that protect you from those microbes that were tagging along with the ticks when you were foraging for the food. So nature is, it's part of this natural cycle. Well, we've removed ourselves from that cycle. You know, we're getting bitten by the ticks and mosquitoes, but we're not eating those wild foods. So, and all of our foods have been cultivated for fat and sugar and starch, and we've stripped out all of those protective chemicals. So we're losing that protection, that insurance that nature gives us, that when we get bitten by ticks and pick up these microbes, that we're going to be okay, right?
Right,
so
right.
We don't have that anymore. It's not in our food supply. So herbs are the way you can get it back. Herbs have all those protective chemicals. So when we're adding herbs in back into our food supply, and modern way to do it, to get enough of it is capsules, and you know, so we can carry it almost to a higher level than we were getting in nature. But it's really important to do those things to regain that natural protection that we're not getting anymore.
Yeah. You know, my favorite is tinctures with herbals, because herbals will immediately, the minute they hit your mouth, they're already absorbed. So it's getting through many different pathways, you know. And I think it's really important to understand that you really need to find something that works with you, not against you, to find things that will not overstress you and put you into another path that you aren't able to come back from. Also, to be able to find something, and I like singular remedies because I know you said you take a bunch of them at one time, but I like singular because I like to take one at a time and just, you know, engage in the plant and understand it and know what it's going to do and let it work through its pathway. And then maybe if I need another, then get another. Because sometimes we get so caught up in the idea of many people, you know, they'll sit down and they'll open up, you know, this package that they've got a baggie with about 30, you know, things in, pills in, sit there and take them, and then, you know, they're eating at McDonald's. So the concept of being able to mentally connect with what you're doing, mentally connect with what is the purpose of this whole thing in the first place, and being able to be connected to it also, that, you know, herbs are live food also. You know, herbs are very energetic, highly energetic. And if you're giving that to your body and you want the energy from it, you don't turn around and diss it. It's sort of like going to church on Sunday, you know, but you're cursing all the way down the aisle, you know, that kind of idea. You know, it's just, you need to be present and honor what's here to help you. And it's so important, I think, to be able to have the outcome that you're looking for.
Yeah, I agree. I do all of the above. You know, enjoying fresh herbs, making teas,
right.
All the way to capsules. And for overcoming Lyme disease, I found that it's you need a lot. You do need a spectrum of herbs. You need that orchestra
right.
of different herbs, that synergy. But I also mm-hmm. think it's nice to really get to know individual herbs. And I'm constantly trying new things and experiencing new things. And getting, like you say, getting to know the herb is really nice.
Yeah.
But I think all of the above is good and important in our lives. If we were all embracing herbal therapy and getting to know herbal therapy, our healthcare bill would be a fraction of what it is now. People just
Absolutely.
Wouldn't be ill. But like you said, taking herbs and then going to McDonald's and eating a Big Mac every day, it's
what's
just,
the point?
Right.
Yeah, it's just,
I mean,
it's,
you know,
and then coming in saying, well, it didn't work for me, fix me. And the answer is nobody fixes you, you fix yourself. Number two, you have
That's
to
right.
be responsible for your own health. And number three, it's really an inside job. So knowing this, and I think, you know, you've shared that all the way through your book. Again, your book is Unlocking Lyme. I think we can also find that you say that all the way through your book, and I've said it on the radio many times, is it's really about what you can do for yourself because there is no fix it. It's not like a car where you can take it out and put tires on it and you're good to go, you know?
Right, yeah. Yep,
yeah.
Yep. No doubt about it.
Well, Dr.
Right.
Ross, we've come to the end of the show. I'd like you to share how people could find out more information about you. That'd be wonderful.
Oh, well, probably the best way is just my website that we are working through called RawlsMD.com. And there's a lot of information. There are a lot of resources on there. We are launching a health coaching program just to help people through that, how do I make this happen in my world? I'm working very closely with two health coaches to establish a program to really do a cost-effective a route of helping people embrace these things because so many people find it overwhelming. But there's a lot of information on the website that can lead you to some of the products we've created. The book is available, quite a few different resources and lots of information.
Well, Dr. Ross, it's been such a pleasure to have you with us. I know it's definitely a conquest when you find yourself on the other side and you're saying, I'm so sick, I can't figure out what it is and have to get your own way back up. And you've shared your entire story again in your book, Unlocking Lyme. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, it's a real pleasure. Thank you so much for the invitation. It was a lot of fun.
Well, thank you so much. If you'd like to find out more information about Dr. Rawls, again, is Dr. Bill Rawls, his link is on the bottom of today's show page. You can go there and go directly to his website and find out more information. And it's definitely important that you understand that if something is wrong, to be persistent and be able to ask for help. If you feel like you're still not getting well, as I've always said, do not settle and continue to search for help. Because there's a lot of doctors out there doing different type therapies and treatments. Someone else might just listen to something that you're saying and you go, oh my gosh, I don't know where that came from. I've never said that before, but maybe that's what's wrong with me. Or something that maybe the doctors aren't listening or hearing that you really need to have voiced. It's all about your own personal journey and you are responsible for it. And it's a real tough thing to hear because you say, you know, I hear I'm responsible for it, but I don't know where to start. Well, this is where you start. You can contact Dr. Rawls or myself. Our websites are on the bottom of today's show page. And again, thank you so much for joining us today. And until tomorrow, this is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and have a wonderful evening.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page. Or visit www.drjeanettewellness.com. www.jeanetteGallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.